or movement can escape the spotlight of the Latino Media Collective. The Latino Media Collective delivers consequential coverage from the biggest countries in South America to the smallest enclaves of Central America and the Caribbean, and is available on SoundCloud, iTunes Podcast, and Google Play Music. The Latino Media Collective is recorded in WPFW Studios and airs Fridays at 1 p.m. on WPFW Washington.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going to walk the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no.
What'd I do?
The jury of your peers, having found you guilty, 10 years.
What? Come on, get that.
I was in jail too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and welcome to Crossroads. This is our regular favorite time of the week, the first Tuesday of each week. We come to you live here on Crossroads at WPFW 89.3 FM, your station for jazz and justice. And this is Women's History Month, and we will be dealing with trailblazing women and pioneers who've done things in the criminal justice field. But before we start, we're always open up with what we call the grapevine. Information that you can use.
Good morning, Martin. Hello, beautiful.
Hello. The right to read anything you want. Can you believe that in the year 2024, there are thousands of books being banned across America? And that the number is growing fast. As right-wing activists take over school boards, authors are being harassed, teachers are being fired, and librarians are being threatened with staggering fines and even jail time. It's like we're being dragged back into the 18th century. It's time to take a stand against censorship and the unpopular book bans that are sweeping our country. And in prisons, there are more than 35,000 to 40,000 books that have been banned across the country nationally that inmates inside of institutions cannot read. Boy, this is something else. 70 trade groups signed a letter expressing concerns on D.C. crime. On Thursday, 70 trade associations in the District of Columbia signed a letter to the mayor and the D.C. council expressing concerns about an alarming increase in violent crimes. And that's one of the things that we'll be talking about a little later. One in two adults in the U.S. have experienced incarceration in their life. One out of every 28 kids in America, one has a parent in prison. Too many people are serving prison terms that don't make us safer. People languish in prison for years, even decades, because our laws don't give them a second chance. Extreme sentences devastate families and communities across the country, but they hit the communities of color the hardest. Decades of evidence show that lengthy mandatory sentences do not reduce crime, but impose high economic and social costs on taxpayers and families. Mandatory minimum sentencing laws also tend to create unwarranted disparities by treating similar offenders differently in different offenders in the same city. California's program of offering Nylalone to all departing prisoners has and does save lives, an attorney said. Without this treatment, the number of overdose deaths, we believe, would be far higher. California prison deaths from drug overdoses surge. Advocates in states across the country work hard to defend youth from harmful media rhetoric and tough on crime policies proposed against them. And this leads us right into the D.C. Safe Secure Bill that was passed last week. by the D.C. Senate Council. And it was signed yesterday by Mayor Bowser in Washington, D.C. And folk, we have to talk about that with our guest this morning. It's a young lady who I'm proud of, who's been making phenomenal progress after serving 18 or 19 years in prison. And she's out, and you won't believe what she's been doing and doing. And we will highlight women, trailblazers, and pioneers who've done and done things in this community and all across the country. We have a big national conference we'll be talking about later, as well as another all-women's national returning citizens conference next month. So this is National Women's Month, and we want to make sure that we highlight the work and efforts of those young ladies who've been involved in trying to make a difference in making their communities safe. And our guest this morning is LaShawna Thompson Eel, Executive Director of the WIRE, W-I-R-E. Women involved in reentry efforts are working together to address youth violence and build resilience to trauma. Good morning, LaShawna. Are you there?
Good morning, Roach. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's so good to hear. I like hearing your voice. You just got a distinct voice. When I hear your voice, I know it's you, LaShawna. How you doing, baby?
I am well. How are you?
Okay. We want to thank you for agreeing to come on this National Women's Month. And they want to talk about what you've been doing in the WIRE. But before we do that, give us a little background of you went to jail. How much time did you serve? How long have you been home? And what you doing now?
Yes, I grew up in Ward 8 in Southeast D.C. And when I was 19, I landed myself in prison for a violent crime. I stayed in prison for 18 years, and I was released in 2011. So that was a lifetime ago now. Since I've been home, I've been involved in social justice work, restorative justice, criminal justice reform, mostly from a gender responsive lens. I'm a member of the National Council of Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls. All the women of the WIRE are members of the National Council. And we also have started the WIRE so that we can support other DC women who are still incarcerated, women coming home from incarceration, and girls at risk of incarceration in neighborhoods where we grew up. And so just this past year, one of my friends, Jay Knight, came home. She served 17 years. She's been home for a year now. And the WIRE was in position to support her. Last year, we had an elder, 75 years old, come home. We picked her up from the airport. We was able to help her to get some stable housing, get her medication. So we're still plugging away one woman at a time, trying to help women get released on compassionate release, get released on the IRA Act. There are women, DC women, who are eligible for the IRA Act, Incarceration Reduction Amendment, the second look. And many of them don't have attorneys and don't have the support to be able to get that relief. So we're still plugging away one woman at a time, trying to help women get out, supporting women when they come home, and also working with girls who have been impacted by the justice system to help prevent them from going into the system.
You know,
a woman who was 75 years old.
I couldn't hear you, Martin. You're on mute.
The young lady, she said the young lady who did the 75 years, how much time did she serve?
No, she did 17 years, wow. And she's been home for a year now.
Wow. Does she have any kids or grandkids?
She do. She have two children. One of her daughters is about to graduate from college with a degree in music. All right. And her son is doing really well working in a daycare center on the base. I'm so proud of them. They're my babies. We took them. When I was working at Mocha Roach years ago, I feel like it was 10 years ago now, might have been 10 years ago, we was taking her kids up to visit her. And since then, I've been able to maintain a relationship with her kids. And so, yes, they're doing amazing. They're adults now.
So let me ask you this. One of the things that I've noticed, LaShawna, and our co-host is here, Nikeecha Taifa. That Nikeecha is something else.
The queen.
Hi, LaShawna, my sister. How are you?
You know, I wanted to ask the question in regards to I've been doing this work for about a few decades, and I know it's always hard when women go to jail and they come out. Very few women participate in programs to help those that they left behind, and part of that is, I think, and I mean, I could be wrong, that the stigma of a mother or a woman being locked up, they try to keep that away from their kids or from society, whatever. So most women who go to prison like to keep that to themselves. But you are one of the few women, Sean, you and Andrea James and the crew you got at the Y, y'all say to hell with it. We left buddies back there, and we're going to let everybody know this is where we've been. Here's, and we're coming back to bring, to try to get the other, the rest of them out. Why is it that very few women participate in reentry programs and such when they come out of prison? What's your take on that, LaShawna?
I imagine that you are right. Some of it is the stigma, Roach, but also some of it is sexism. Some of it is because women don't feel welcome into the social justice space or the advocacy space, because oftentimes it's a male-dominated space. And even when they start to do that work, they don't feel like it's a space they want to stay in. And so, yeah, I would say that more women might get involved if we create space and opportunity for them to be involved, become more inclusive of women. And as you were talking, I couldn't help but think about Kim. I watched that movie. Me, everybody, all of us watched that movie. And I got so many calls and text messages about Kimba. Kimba, the movie.
Oh, you
Kimba,
haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, it's on BET Plus. They made a movie about Kimba's life. And I just remember being there with her. And when I texted her, she said, I wish I could have put in a movie how we taught Black history together, because Susan Rosenberg took Kimba. You know, Susan Rosenberg was a political prisoner. We was all in Danbury, Connecticut together. And Susan took Kimba and I under her wing and helped us to learn and understand Black history. And then we started to teach Black history when Susan left. Yes, yeah, Susan left the facility and left it to us, passed the torch to us. So Kim and I was co-facilitating Black history courses in FCI Danbury. And the movie was just so touching to me. One, because her parents are the true heroes.
Yes, indeed.
And I just wish more families would stand up and fight for their loved ones, because like it can make a difference, as we saw in that movie. But also, Kimba, I think, deserves her flowers as being the mother of the movement, in my opinion, is one of the first women to get released and begin to advocate and use her voice to let America know that there are women who are being impacted, unjustly impacted by our legal system. And, you know, like I said, other women came home and decided to do the same thing, I think, partially because of Kimba and seeing her success. But I do believe that more women would get involved, Roach, if they felt like it was a space that welcomed them and would be open to their voice and their lived experience, that people believed in them and understood the power and the impact that they could make.
So, you know, LaShawna, Roach, let me just step in for a minute. LaShawna, you characterized Kimba as like the mother of the movement. You're absolutely correct. It was her story that we used to highlight up in Congress that helped to change some of these laws. But LaShawna, you were the mother of the local movement here in the DMV. You were one of the first voices that I heard, women voices coming out in terms of these issues and a policy change and your organization, The Wire, and the work you were doing up in the city council. So you are totally to be heralded. You wrote a book about all this. You are starring in a movie and a film of your own dealing with many of these issues. And you know what's really interesting? You mentioned Susan Rosenberg. Well, I was on her legal defense team when she was on trial in D.C. before she went into the D.C. jail in the federal system. So that it's like a 360-degree whatever you could call it, because I love all three of you all, Susan Rosenberg, Kimba Smith, yourself, Andrea James, and the so many Fox and Bob, the so many other women who have survived, you know, this system. And we will hear a little bit more about that Kimba film later on in the show when Carlisle Holder comes on. So I just want to say kudos and flowers to you, LaShawna.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Kichi. I appreciate that.
You know, this is, like I said, this is National Women's Month. And the names that Nikichi called off of these powerful trailblazing women, and as you said previously, LaShawna, that there are more women who want to get involved because it's a male-dominated thing and society stigma. They don't want most kids to be upset when they find out their mama been in prison or grandma or dad been in prison. So a lot of women come out and withhold that. But that's not a shameful thing to go through. The thing is, what can we do to bring them other women out, because we left a lot of folks, and everybody in jail, people, ain't guilty. You got a lot of people in jail that's guilty, but you got quite a few who aren't, and they need to be get out. And maybe even those that are guilty should not have to do these lengthy, impossible sentences, 20, 30, 40 years. 20 years and your life is over. I don't care what you say. Very few people can bounce back like you had, LaShawna. You did 18, and your husband did a big bit. And you come out, and he been in, and you in, and y'all get together and get married and go to college and run in your business. You are an exceptional couple. Last month we had on, last 2 weeks we had on Fox and Rob Richardson from New Orleans. Mm-hmm. He did 21, she did 3. They did a movie. It was nominated for Academy Award in January called Time. And we sent some phenomenal women. And lady, you right up there with them, LaShawna. You got Andrea James. You got you. You got Kimball Smith. We got quite a bit. We got Michelle Alexander. She wasn't in, but we got folk women who are making their voices heard. What do you say, LaShawna, for them women who are listening in the we got quite a few women who listen to our show from inside the institution. Yes. What would you say to them ladies now, LaShawna, who are still inside the institution, if we're listening to the show? What would you have to say to them?
That's a tough one, Roach. I would say continue to take it one day at a time. I would like to say her name, Michelle West. And yes, there's nothing more that I could say that wasn't already expressed in the movie, except that she was an awesome friend and role model to many of us. You know, she helped us to understand how to parent our kids from behind the wall. She just shared so much maternal love and wisdom and was always available and accessible to us for that guidance and advice that we needed to get through that very difficult time. And we are all praying that she'll get a second chance opportunity to come to home to her daughter soon. And I would just say, you know, I know things when you're on the inside, it seems like things not happening and things move slow. But I would say to the men and women on the inside that there are a lot of freedom fighters working really hard to shift this paradigm and bring them home. So keep the faith. Stay prayed up, and during this holy month of Ramadan, pray and fast that Allah will give us strength to help the nation to see that these systems are harming and not helping this situation.
Yes.
Especially the children.
Yes. You know, Nikisha, you said you worked on Susan Rosenberg case. I know I get calls almost every week, Mertine and I, from men and women and their families, mothers and grandparents, even their kids. We're called, please help my mommy or my daddy. And I know that when you was in, you are one of the few, it's only two couples I know that can stand up the way you are, LaShawna. Fox and Rob Rich, both of them went to prison. She did 3, he did 21, and she raised 6 kids by herself while the father was doing that 21 years inside of prison. And you come out, you did 18 years, and your husband did about 15 or 20. And y'all got back together and you get married, and to see returnees coming out, falling in love, getting a family together. Both of y'all been inside of institution and it didn't even make no difference. You connected on the ways that people out here don't even really understand the connection. How has it been for you and your husband, who was also, you did 18 years. He did how much?
He actually did about 25 years in 2 different terms, because he's from St. Louis. And he did state time, and then he got out and he ended up doing federal time. So in total, he did about 25 years. And currently he holds his master's degree, and he's working at Department of Behavioral Health on helping out with the opioid crisis in D.C. And he's done a lot to help me to understand the public health approach to understanding gun violence intervention. He is really the reason why I got involved in gun violence intervention, because he was in Chicago in grad school learning about, you know, there's a different way to address this problem. And I just became so intrigued. And at the same time that I was learning that from him, I was working under the former Attorney General Carl Racine, who happened to be also studying a public health approach, a trauma-informed approach, a community-centric approach? What could we do different? And so those two worlds just collided, and I ended up helping to lead the Cure the Streets program. But I learned everything I know about that work from Carl Racine and my husband and basically my lived experience.
There you go. We got a special guest on the line. He's having a conference April 5th and 6th over in Arlington, the National Returning Citizens Conference. Joining us is Mr. Carlisle Holder. He used to be a superintendent or warden in some of the federal institutions. He's been retired over 15 to 20 years. And the brother used to work with Walter Ridley and some more people here in Washington. So Carlisle is on the phone. Good morning, Carlisle Holder.
Good morning, my good brother. How are you? Good morning to the Washington, D.C. Merry Christmas. It's always a pleasure to hear your voice.
How you doing? You want to share what this conference is you have coming up on April 5th and 6th, the National Returning Citizens Conference, what it is, and share a little insights about it, please?
Yes, sir. We are excited to host the fourth annual National Returning Citizens Conference in Arlington at the Renaissance Capital Hotel, April the 5th and the 6th. We are so excited. April the 5th and 6th. It's a two-day conference. We're going to have about 24 workshops in eight different areas, and we're just excited to host this. This is our second in-person. Last year, we hosted in conjunction with the Tory program with TD Jakes. So this year, we have a great lineup of speakers, and we have four special panels. We're going to bring directors from across the country to talk about what are they doing to prepare the men and women returning to our communities. And really our hope is to make sure that every returning citizen that's coming home have the best opportunity to become productive and not go back into the prison system. So we are bringing experts in all, you know, eight areas that the conference is going to focus on. And those eight areas are basically everything that they will need as they return to our communities. And we have brought in some national experts, individuals from all over the country is going to speak on faith, education, workforce development and jobs, housing, health and family reunification, law and juvenile justice, research and history, and technology.
Wow. So, go ahead.
No, go ahead, sir. I'm going to let you pipe in
for a moment because, Carlisle, my dear brother, how are you? This is Nikichi Taifa. And before you came on, we were talking with LaShawnya Thompson-Nell about the Kimba movie and film. And I know that at your conference on April 5th, there's going to be a special free screening for the community of the Kimba film. So I just wanted to make sure to highlight that. And also, Roach, you frequently have Fox and Rob on your show. I understand Fox and Rob are going to be doing a keynote presentation as part of the convening. Did I get that right, Carlisle Holder?
Yes, my good sister. I love how you just came and picked your brother up and make sure that I was real clear. Yes, we're going to have Kimba Smith screening is going to be on that Friday evening, and we're going to provide dinner after that. We plan to also, Fox Rich. I've known Fox Rich for many, many years, and I have even took her to speak in my home country of Trinidad. So we're just excited for her being the keynote speaker. We have Bullock of a Flick Shop. We got Reverend Tony Christopher Houston, Tony Loudon, the former White House re-entry czar, and a whole other keynote speakers. And obviously, Sister Taifa didn't tell y'all, she's on my committee, so she's helping me to bring it all together. We have an amazing group of individuals, and we're also going to recognize three forward thinking programs within the DMV that's really doing great work to reach our brothers and sisters that are returning home. And then we're going to kick it off with a 50 forward to break mass incarceration. We're going in America. We're going to have a march and a prayer rally on Sunday the 7th. And we're going to be gathering at the National Black History Museum, and we're going to go to the Martin Luther King Memorial, and we're going to have a nice program just praying. As you know, Roach, Brother Roach, you know, we're right in the midst of about 50 years of mass incarceration in America when you know, President Reagan then signed, you know, the Crime Prevention Act of 1984. So we know what impact that has had on our families, and particularly families, you know, that look like us, brown and black people. So we want to make sure that we break that cycle and also provide them with real opportunity for change when they return to our communities.
We want to thank you for that. That's a little capsule. We're going to have Brother Carlisle back before the conference on April 3rd and 7th.
And people can register at www.nrcc2024.org. And NRCC stands for National Returning Citizens Conference. So that's what people can register. And if you want to just do the free screening of Kimba, just go to that registration and scroll till you see the Kimba movie. You got to register because it's capacity limited.
So you have to register. Is this a free event for anyone? Can anyone come?
No, for the conference, there's a Justice Impact individual that I don't know. I think we have sold out of those free registration, but it's $99, and that comes with 2 days of lunch and snacks and so forth. We really wanted to make it affordable so anybody can come, but we are limited in numbers. So I think we're about almost 2/3 of capacity. The max we can have is 400, and I think the last count I got, we was at 250. So we want people, as Sister Taifa said, to go on the nrcc2024.org and register for the conference. We're also going to have a special gala that we're hoping to pull off with Life Jennings, a former, you know, incarcerated individual that doing some great work in the music industry. So we have a lot of things that we're planning and we're finalizing things, but you can get all the information on our website.
Thank you. You
can find out more about the conference. And I look forward to having a more in-depth conversation about the workshops and the speakers and the work that we're trying to get accomplished as a result of this conference.
Thank you. I'm proud of you, and I'm proud of Andy Keechee. Man, y'all been pulling things off all across the country, and we will be there, and you will be on our show within the next 2 weeks, Carlisle, so we can take and flush this whole conference out. I want to thank you, and man, and for you to be a former warden and doing what you're doing, you make my hair grow, man, and I don't have no hair. You know what I mean?
You know, you my brother. No, but, you know, I said I see the work. When I see the work that you continue to do for so many years, who am I, right?
Yeah.
We say that, you know, the work is plentiful and the laborers are few.
Yes.
And what we have done for the least of those of us, we have done it for. So I just want to be in the God, man, just trying to make sure that our brothers and sisters have a fair opportunity, right, to when they return to our communities to succeed.
Thank you. Thank you. That's Brother Carlisle Holder, a good friend, and he's running, is connected with this National Returning Citizens Conference on April 5th and 6th in Arlington, Virginia, at the Renaissance Arlington Capitol View Hotel. It's a 2-day conference. Please check it out. And he has some top-notch speakers, entertainers, and they're trying to get to the bottom of this whole issue in terms of reentry, fairness, making sure our people have a successful reentry back inside. And I take my hat off to Carlisle Holden and Nkechi. You are all over the place. I knew you had to be connected some way. I don't see nothing going. LaShawn and Nkechi, you know, every time we turn around, Nkechi's out of the country. She's here. She's there. Lady, you make me feel so proud, Martine and I. So I want to thank Brother Carlisle Holden for coming, joining us this morning. And we'll get right back with you shortly, sir, to do a more in-depth interview on this historic, powerful conference that's coming there, because I know a lot of work went into it and a lot of people are coming in from all over the country to be a part of this. So I want to thank you, Brother Carlisle, for joining us this morning. We'll get back with you.
Yes, sir. And thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it. Always a pleasure to, you know, to hear your voice and to hear that Merry Christmas greetings. And, well, you know, you continue.
Well, you know, usually when I talk to a warden, I can't talk to a warden until the count clears. Has the count cleared yet?
It's been cleared for 16 years.
Thanks a lot, Brother Carlisle.
LaShawn, likewise.
Okay. LaShawn is still on the phone. I know you've been working with gun violence and all kinds of stuff. What's your take on this crime bill that just came out? And I just saw that the Mayor Bowser just signed the crime bill that was passed by the D.C. City Council last week. And I got some serious concerns with some of the issues. What's your take on this, LaShawn? Because you were one of the few people, you and Sean, you're all on the front line. You're in the community. You with the Y. You got ladies all over the city. And you're all feeling the feedback or the pushback from some of this. Because if we talked about this crime bill that was passed, it's for black boys and brown boys. There's very few white kids get arrested. So this is like new Jim Crow law, but I call it Joogie Boogie law. Because it's the only people that will be affected by this is kids. And you know something that really got that gets me twisted is when you get sick and you go to the doctor, and you tell the doctor you can't breathe and you're coughing, he starts asking you some questions and investigate why you're feeling this and what contributed to this condition. The same thing is true when you get a fire. Your house catch on fire and the firemen come and they put the fire out. Then they do an investigation to find out the causes of the fire. But we don't do the same approach when our youth is involved. We're talking about punishment, penalization, over-incarceration, isolation, and sending these kids all over America. And that's not fair. That's not right. And I'm thinking this knee-jerk reaction law that was passed, the same thing in the 80s when they passed with the three-strike laws and mandatory minimums. People say we got to do something, but what you're doing is the wrong thing. Sure, you're going to punish them. Sure, you're holding them accountable, but you don't take these kids' entire life. I met so many people coming out, as you do too, you know, Shana, did 20, 30, 40, 50 years. Their life is just about over. And for you and your husband to do what you're doing, to get married, to go to college, to work for the Attorney General running programs, and y'all are together and you both was inside of an institution, that says a whole lot of positive things that we don't hear of folk who went through what they're going. We're going to take a break. We're going to take a break. This is WPFW 89.3 FM here at WPFW. All right, LaShawn, what's your take on that crime bill? I know you got some position, some concerns on how this going to impact, because it's going to impact us. The work we're doing now, we're going to have more people that we got to provide assistance or support to, because the law they're passing right now is going to just lock up more black boys and brown boys and send them all over America. Go ahead.
So, yeah, of course, there's a lot I could say about this, and I'll try to be brief, but to be honest, I've kind of tried to pull away from the politics around gun violence intervention because it just started to feel uncomfortable. Like, we're basically playing politics with people's lives in a nutshell.
Yes.
And
yes.
So I have taken a step back from being on the front lines as far as the politics of the situation go. But two things that you said that I want to highlight. One is you're talking about the root causes, looking at the root causes of violence and understanding why these things are happening in the community. And I think that people may be missing that. The reason why we want to do that is not because we want to give a person a slap on the wrist. It's not because we don't want to hold people accountable, but we want to look at the root causes because we believe that if we address those issues, that would help us to prevent more violence from happening in the first place, so that we don't have to be so responsive and punitive. So, for example, if we was to address poverty, or if we was to provide more trauma support in the school system, or if we were to create more economic opportunity for some of the young people living in neighborhoods with high rates of poverty, maybe looking at things like guaranteed basic income, Maybe looking at things like making more of our schools restorative in nature, creating a more restorative culture across the DCPS school system. There's so many things that we could do that won't cause more harm. Because what happened is we did this in the past. The brother just mentioned we're 50 years in. We did this in the past. And some of the things that we're seeing now are the consequences of those choices that we made decades ago.
And
so therefore, we're going to find ourselves in the same situation 10, 20, 30 years from now, because the impact of incarceration is generational. Once you come home, the impact that the damage that has been done to your family and community as a result of your absence is impossible to repair. And so we find ourselves in a cycle of violence, in a cycle of poverty, in a cycle of lack of opportunity. So, I don't really have any answers except that, you know, I pray that at some point our leaders and political officials would really try to study and understand these public health approaches. And people don't want to accept it, but these things take time. Like when you're implementing a public health approach, we have the Credible Message Initiative, we have the Warren's Office, we have Cure the Streets, we have Safe Passage, we have all these things that we're doing, and it takes time for them to be effective. So it's not something you do for 6 months or a year and you expect to see instant results. And for me, as a leader, whenever my team is not succeeding, I look at myself. What am I doing wrong? How can I be a better leader? What do they need to be more successful? So, you know, my prayer is that our leadership will really step up and take a serious look at, do they even understand accountability? Because it's not punishment. Accountability and punishment are not interchangeable. They are not the same thing. And even if even when we start to look at this from a victim perspective, for some victims, they might say, yeah, I feel better when a person gets incarcerated. Some victims might say, I would feel better if I could talk to them and I could find out why this young person decided to do this.
Yes.
So, like, I mean, we say that we are doing this on behalf of the victim, but many of the people who are involved in this violence are victims themselves. So I'm not really buying it. Many of the people who are involved in violence have been deeply impacted by trauma. I'm talking about sustained trauma, like exposure to violence at a very young age. So we're not doing it to protect victims, because those young Black boys you are referring to, they are the victims.
Yes.
So if we had an interest in protecting them, it wouldn't be let's punish them more. And some of the young men around this mask situation, you know, you take off your mask or you're in violation, you could get arrested for wearing a mask. Some of the young men have expressed that wearing a mask keeps them safer.
Yeah.
Because they can actually move throughout the community without someone recognizing what neighborhood they may be from. So they can go to their paternal family member's house, or they can go to their cousin's house, or maybe even go to school and not be recognized. So yeah. I would be, instead of saying take the mask off or get locked up, I would be saying, why are they wearing masks? Why do they not feel safe? And what can we do to address that?
You know, you hit it right on the head, LaShawna. That's what we're talking about. If we actually want public safety, more police and prosecutions ain't the answer. It's about building communities at every level. You can build communities when people are hungry. You can't build communities when people are hungry, housing insecure, unemployed, without health care, mental health counseling. You got a 40% truancy rate in Washington, D.C., that 40% of the kids are staying at home. Yeah, kids afraid to go to school. And as you said about that mask thing, it protects them. It allows them not to be recognized, or they can walk out of the school or walk safely in their own communities. But the bottom line is it goes a lot deeper than that. We're talking about jobs reduce crime, jobs reduce gun violence, jobs reduce homelessness, jobs reduce all this jiggy boogie foolish we're going through. I mean, it's obvious. They said the average salary for the average white person in Washington, D.C. is $125,000 a year. The average salary for Black people in Washington, D.C. is $45,000.
That sounds about right.
Huh?
That sounds about right, especially in Ward 7 and 8.
Yeah. So how can you afford? And then not only that, we had some people calling us. They don't have a supermarket or food desert. You got folks. We went through I Street in Southwest. One side of I Street, you got public housing. Then right across the street, you got luxury high-rise apartments right across the street. A Safeway down at the corner. And the poor people can't go to the Safeway because the prices are too high. They got to ride a bus to far parts of Washington, D.C. So you got all these obstacles, hurdles, and restrictions in folks' way and say that you created this climate. And when we had enough and we decided to break out, you said you broke one of our laws and now we're going to punish you. But you should, you know, the doctor don't say that when you're going there with counseling or cough. He said, how did you catch it? Where were you at? What led to that? Why is it they use that same investigative diagnostic analysis for medical issues and for other issues, but they don't apply that same strategy to the crime? We know what can stop the crime. We can reduce it if we get the right resources. And people, I am tired of talking about this and going on the front line, walking to folks. And we know what the answer is. And we got, and you called somebody a little while ago, his name, LaShawna, Michelle West. We've been trying to help, we've been working on the case for the past 7-8 years. Alice Marie Johnson.
Yes.
All these other folks that got them pardons from President Obama and that kind of stuff got out. We got quite a few ladies, soldiers like this. She's been in almost over 30 years, hasn't she?
Yes. Yes, on a conspiracy, yeah. Drug conspiracy.
And didn't kill nobody. Nobody died.
And that's the problem with these laws, these mandatory minimum sentences. We're not talking about slap on the wrist. We're talking about basically death by incarceration. That's what we're talking about. These sentences are so long and so lengthy. They're designed for people to die in prison. And, you know, I'm glad that the case of Michelle West was highlighted. Just a bit in Kimba's movie. Everybody needs to know about that. I know that it's the feature of Andrea James's Free Her rally coming up, dealing with clemency, not just for Michelle West, but for all women who have been unjustly in these long, lengthy sentences. So, yeah, I just wanted to chime in on that, Michelle West.
You know, LaShawna, they should do a movie about you and Sean. That's right. I mean, here they got a movie out called Time about Fox and Rob.
I saw it.
Kimba
I loved
Smith
it.
Got a movie out, and that brother in D.C., a good friend of ours, Kareem Mowat, the Lawton Prison of Terror. You got quite a few films that's been made, produced, and starring folk with criminal record returnees. And these films are motivational. They are inspiring. We went up to Howard University 2 weeks ago when Fox and Rob came in from New Orleans and showed their film Time. We've seen it 5 or 6 times. And every time I see it, it brings tears to my eyes.
LaShawna, what's the name of that movie that you're in? Because she is in a film.
Oh, you're talking about the documentary Returning Citizens with me and Mr. Thornton, yeah. Tyrone Parker, and a couple others.
Yeah, I'm in that one.
That kind of predated everybody else's film.
Yeah, that was a while ago. But you know, the thing about Time that I love, me and my husband watched it, and he even loved it. And he's not really that into documentaries, so I was happy that he was impressed with it. But the thing that I loved about that is that she was able to really shape the narrative and tell her own story because of all of that footage that she created and collected over the years. I thought that was so amazing. Yeah, like that was like some old school storytelling, like back in the day storytelling, where like straight from the horse's mouth, for lack of a better term. Yes. That was just remarkable.
You know what? I like to see your story, Dennis, because we was in that same movie talking about The Return of Citizen with Charles Thornton and everybody. I forgot all about that film.
Yeah.
But folks who are listening, you got quite a few people who've been incarcerated who got powerful stories, and they made movies about them and films about them. And I haven't seen Kimba's story, but all these films are inspiring and motivational. And it shows that it doesn't mean that because you get knocked down that you're knocked out. All you got to do is get up. And
amen.
And you and that rascal Sean, y'all got up, straightened up, tied your shoes up, and broke out running. and I'm seeing y'all now running down the court. Y'all haven't stopped yet.
So, Roach, let's have a moment to see if the community wants to call in and raise a question or comment to Lasagna. They can call 202-588-0893. Join in on this phenomenal conversation with Lasagna and Roach Brown. 202-588-0893.
Can I ask the question, Roach? Because let me tell you something I struggle with a lot. I'm on social media a lot. And some of the people that I know and love are really, really pro-punishment. I'm really struggling with this because, like I said, these are people that I know and love. Some of them are formerly incarcerated.
Yeah.
Some of them have served a lot of time in prison. And it's really, really starting to get to me. You know, normally I won't engage on social media because I don't want to get drawn into no arguments and stuff like that. But I found myself like being more responsive because it's just astonishing to me when you know the harm that this system has caused our families and communities. I'm like, is it a lack of creativity? Is that everybody is just so fearful and afraid? Is it the pressure? I would like to hear from you and Nikichi about like what is really going on there. And I'm talking about, again, the people that I know and love. Some of them have had my lived experience. How can this be happening?
So go on, Roach. You the expert.
Before we answer that, Nikichi, we'll take the first caller, then come back and answer it. Okay, you have it, Nikichi. Caller, you're on the air. Question or comment, please.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Nate Morris. I'm calling in with a comment. You all were speaking of the root causes to a lot of this killing and things of that nature. And I was thinking that I believe a lot of it has to do with what we instill in our kids. And I can speak from my own personal experience by me feeding into so many irrational beliefs about myself as a child, coming from trusted adults, I began to hate the little boy in the mirror. So when I became much older, I held so much contempt for not only self, but those who look like me. So it made it that much easier for me to pull that trigger, because when I was pulling it, I was pulling on a reflection of myself.
Hmm. Wow.
Have a good day.
Wow.
That's real. I appreciate you. I appreciate that. That's real.
Thank you, Brother Nate. Go ahead, Nikichi. You want to respond to Yasana's question?
Yeah. First of all, I think the brother's comments were, in fact, profound. We need to have our self-esteem. We need to have self-love for each other, because I think that that's one of the reasons why we engage in our conduct that should not be engaged in. And going to Lashanya's situation, there's a lot of pain out there. I mean, there's a lot of pain. And I think that part of that pain also, and people, even with lived experiences, calling out for punishment, is that they might be unaware of viable options. Okay. All the things that you talked about in this call, dealing with addressing the root issues and the root causes of criminal conduct and the like, many times we don't deal with those root causes, and they see that there's no other way to protect or to, protect communities or whatever. It's through punishment, because they don't see any real addressing of these root causes. I think if folk can really see that, you know, what y'all tried to do with the NEAR Act, which never really, unfortunately, came to fruition here in D.C., things that would address root causes of crime just have not been actualized. And until we do that, I think so many people are going to be calling for the punishment modality.
Thank you, Nikichi. That is really helpful, like, for real.
You know,
the hopelessness.
Well, you got a lot of people, that, like you, I'm just surprised that we got some brothers and sisters who've been in, and they talked about giving guys life and throwing away the keys, and they've been inside the institution, and they know what it's like. We don't have no problem with holding people accountable, letting them do the time. But when you take a person's whole life and the life wasn't lost, you know, that is excessive, extreme. When men do 30, 40, 50 years and nobody got hurt and nobody died, you know, and this kind of hold them accountable, but don't take somebody's entire life. And then not only that, when you get a felony, you are unemployable for the rest of your life. We got a case. In fact, soon I get finished, I've been subpoenaed, and I ain't know they could do this, Nikisha. They subpoenaed me by the Zoom. So I got to go on court. I ain't know they can Zoom you to court. I know they ran us in there.
21st century. They'll have AI up there.
So I got to go to court for a Zoom hearing in the next half hour, 45 minutes. And it blew my mind. If I don't respond to this subpoena for Zoom, there's some legal issues got to be worked out. So this whole thing is turned around. And they're locking about people. Nikita, you know this better than I do. 95% of all new defendants plead guilty. Ain't no more trials. So that thing about the jury trial, that's going by the wayside, and guys are pleading guilty and that kind of stuff. And they need us. And when folks come out, I'll send people to you, Nishana, because we're backing out or trying to back out, but you can't. This is the kind of work that you can't just stop and say, I'm finished. People know your track record, and they call you and say, man, can you help us? And you got to say yes. You can't turn your back on it. So we need to have the entire community. And I just want to make, before I close, them 70 trade groups that signed a letter expressing concerns on D.C. crime. We have the letter, the list of the seven trades, some of the biggest businesses in Washington, D.C. are crying and hurting. And we got groups, OGs, CURE, Alliance of Concern. We got groups, and what your group, you are. We got folks working with boots on the ground to try to, but they can't get the resources. And they come out and passing a damn law called Make D.C. Safe. Hey, how that law going to make anybody safe? I mean, laws don't make people safe. People make people safe. Programs make people safe. And was nothing in that crime bill about intervention or prevention. That's what we're talking about. And they're gonna locking up our youth. Now, the work y'all doing now with the wine and the ladies you got, they'll be dealing with these kids in the next several years when they start coming out 10, 20 years from now.
What have those businesses done to try to help prevent the violence? I will be very curious. And I want to say a couple more things. I know we can very close soon. One is, you know, I just want to call out what happens when people become incarcerated. People in prison are starving. They are suffering from mental health challenges as a result of isolation. They are unable to celebrate their religious practices. They are being abused, sexually assaulted, and basically treated like they are not human. Sweet. Their medical issues are being neglected. Like, there's nothing helpful about incarceration. The things that can be helpful to people, like getting an education, having access to, you know, fitness, religion, mental health support, all sorts of things that actually help you. Those things can happen in community. Those things don't have to happen once you become incarcerated. I think people are under the illusion that prison changes people. And I just want to make sure that people know it is not prison that changes people. It is access to the education, the programs, the positive patterns that you create, you know, practicing your religion, exercising. It's those things. Those things can happen in community proactively before a person actually gets involved in violence. And even if a person is engaging in some sort of delinquent behavior, those things can turn them around in community the same way those things can turn them around in prison.
Yes, you're right. All right, Nikisha, you want to chime in? We got about three, four more minutes. Come on, Nikisha.
Well, I just want to accent what LaShawnya said earlier, because I think it's all tied up in her quote. She's saying, we got to stop playing politics with people's lives. And I think that's what's going on across the board, and why we have not been able to enact really substantive, progressive policy changes, because there's politics being changed, and we need to go in and stop that. That's it.
You know that old thing about that crime bill, and all city councilmen, there's 12 members, and only one member voted present, Tayron White. The other 11 members voted in support of it, and Mayor Bowser signed the bill yesterday into law. So this crime bill that's coming down the pike is jiggy boogie. It's jiggy boogie, talking about people playing politics with folks' lives. And these folks are passing this law out of knee-jerk reaction because the community is saying something needs to be done, so they're doing something. And what they're doing is they're jumping on our community, jumping on the black and brown population, going to lock them up, send them across America, and keep them locked up for 30, 40, 50 years. Come on, y'all. We can. There's other alternatives to mass, long, lengthy incarceration that you can use. But as you, and in fact, all the youth mind is not fully developed until you're 25 years old. So why are you going to punish a kid like he's a man and he's 16 or 17 because he did a bad act and society said we got to do something, so we're going to throw this kid away? And that's what's happening. They're throwing our kids away. We got a minute. Go ahead, baby.
I just want to say I thank God for you, Roach. I know you've been doing this for so many years, and I just thank you for not giving up and fighting for our freedom.
I just started last week, Lashana. Okay, our time is up. Thank you, Lashana Elm, Executive Director of The Y, Women Involved in Reentry Efforts, and have working together to address youth violence. Thank you, Lashana. Thank you, Nikichi. Thank you, Martine. Thank you, Carlisle Holder and our staff. And until next week, Merry Christmas to you. Remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Thank you. Thank you.
Do you have a car that you're not using anymore? Help your community radio station by donating your used vehicle to WPFW, where it will be sold at auction, and the proceeds will help keep your favorite jazz and justice station alive and running. The benefit? You get a tax write-off while supporting quality programming.
That's what I'm talking about.
For more information, just call 1-866-WPFW-CAR. That's 1-866-WPFW-CAR.
Elise Bryant here. Bev Grant and the DC Labor Chorus will perform We Were There, a celebration of Women's History Month with music and the spoken word, next Tuesday, March 12th, the Tacoma Bus Boys and Poets. Admission is free, but tickets are required. And you can get them now at laborheritage.org. Click on calendar. See you there.
Economic, political, and military decisions in Washington, D.C. impact this entire country and world. And yet corporate media offers few facts, history, or people's voices about these important issues impacting our lives. I'm Esther Ivarum. Welcome to On the Ground, Voices of Resistance from the Nation's Capital, here on WPFW 89.3, Fridays at 10 a.m. We cover local, national, and international social justice activism, including those who come to D.C. from across the nation or from across the world to speak truth to power. Whether it's the war machine, climate change, the movement for black lives, healthcare, education, the economy, housing, voting, corporate power, immigration, criminal justice, or environmental justice. Check out On the Ground, Voices of Resistance from the Nation's Capital, Fridays at 10 a.m., here on your station for jazz and justice.
WPFW Local Station Board invites you to attend our town hall meeting Saturday, March 16th at the New Bethany Baptist Church, 1300 10th Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., from noon until 2:30 p.m. Our theme is WPFW Generations Moving Forward in Unity. Listeners and supporters of all ages are welcome. Young listeners are especially encouraged to attend. We want to hear from you concerning community needs, shaping future broadcasting, and more. Listeners can also take this opportunity to bid farewell to the station's general manager, Jerry Paris, who is retiring after 10 years of service. Connect with WPFW as we plan to move forward together in unity. If unable to attend in person, a Zoom link will be posted on the website. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Celebrating 20 years, the New African Film Festival, presented by AFI and Africa World Now Project, brings the vibrancy of African filmmaking from all corners of the continent and across the diaspora to the DMV at the AFI Silver Theater and Cultural Center in downtown Silver Spring from March 15 to the 28th. The festival features 26 films from 16 countries, including 3 years premieres and discussions with filmmakers. Explore the diversity of new filmmaking from Africa at the 2024 New African Film Festival. Tickets and full schedule at AFI.com/silver. That's AFI.com/silver. Or call 301-495-6700. 301-495-6700. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Welcome to On the Margin with E. Ethelbert Miller. In the studio this morning is Mark Eisner, Meredith M. Taylor, Calvin Reed, Michonne Boston, Todd Stephen Burroughs, Chanda Buchanan.
Ethelbert Miller brings you On the Margin, Thursdays at 9 a.m., with personal, compelling interviews with local, national, and international authors of all backgrounds. To cite a few, screenplay writers, independent researchers, news editors, playwriters, poets, and contemporary novelists of nonfiction, fiction, comedy, historical biographies, and even